Fighting Tyranny. You're listening to Knights and Icelanders.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Knights of the Storm. We're back. It is 30 September 2023. I have on with me today Handy, who was on with me, what, a week ago on the Foxhole?
I think so.
Yeah. And anyway, today we're going to talk about, we're going to pick Handy's brain. He's been kind of not on the internet for a while, so he's got a lot of updates to give us. Very interested in hearing about your little homesteading project and how that's been going and things you've learned from it that might help others. And then we got some stuff that you brought to my attention about a week ago, a new excess death database that I never heard of before, but there's some interesting stuff we found out in there. And then it kind of ties into some stuff Vince Agnelli sent me on replacement migration. I think they had a crystal ball back in 2001. So we'll dig into that and see what's going on or what potentially is going on. So I guess we'll start with how you doing, Handy?
No, I'm doing great. Just living the dream, man. Finally back with internet. That was an ordeal, but hey, it happens.
Oh, Harp says that my date says 20 September. I probably typoed that. I will fix it post show. Thank you, Harps, for letting me know that. Anyway, so let's jump into the verse of the week first. Let's knock that out, and then we'll talk about that, and then get into your homesteading, what's been going on the past 6 or 8 months. And my mouse went crazy. There we go. So this is one we've used before. It comes from Colossians chapter 2, verse 8. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the elemental spiritual forces of this world rather than on Christ. And I thought I'd pull that one back out again because we're looking at all this stuff going on with migration, border laws, you know, not enforcing the border. You got to wear your masks again. You got to let's do another COVID jab. This is all based on man's philosophy. And I'm seeing that trust the experts, trust the white coats. And we've already learned throughout COVID that we can't trust that. So I wanted to bring that up again and say, hey, don't fall for it, folks. You need to have discernment. Pray about it. Ask Christ, is this the right thing for me? You know, you can ask your doctor. That's fine. But I would also talk to God. So what do you think about that, Handy?
I'm sorry. I was reading Narrow Way Ministries down there.
What does he got to say?
Oh, no, he was going through. He reposted the King James Version of the verse. I was just reading it. Sorry. What'd you ask me again?
Oh, what did you think about that verse, about what's going on today?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, this world is a fallen world. You know, what we're living in is not, it's a broken, sinful world. I mean, so we're going to see deception. And here in the last days, that's going to be one of the hallmarks, is going to be deception. And what have we seen? For the last 3 years, especially. It's been nothing but deception.
Yeah. And we should look back. And that's why we do these shows, because I can go back and say, hey, look, they said this. They said, don't listen to Jason Barker. Don't listen to David Knight. Don't listen to Handy. Don't listen to any of these kooks. And they shadow banned us. Then they actually banned us. They banned me for life off of YouTube. I can't even log into my account to delete my videos. You know, they kept them. That's what they said. But now we look back and say, hey, these guys were right. And I'm seeing them pull the same nonsense again with this. What is it going to be? COVID X now, right? It's just fill in the blank.
We've got a perpetual emergency, or, you know, a perpetual reason to take these pharmaceuticals that they want us to take.
Yeah. Customers for life. Right. And there's,
I've got my own, I've been very careful to guard my own opinion, you know, to keep it out of all of this, you know, but I think 3 years is enough to develop an opinion. And in my opinion, there is nothing good come from these vaccines. You know, just from what I've seen. I haven't seen anybody that I talk to that is, I don't know, I've seen the memes. I haven't met anybody that's regrets not taking the shot. I mean, and that is true. I haven't met anybody that says, man, I wish I would have taken the vaccine. I only meet people that either A, are clueless. They don't know what's happened to them as far as the injuries go. And they're still on board with getting the next booster, or they suspect something and they're not going to get anything else. And I do have those patients, and I do talk to those patients. They are open to discussion. You know, one of the hard things about my job and in this day and age is that when I see these injuries that I suspect have been caused by the pharmaceuticals, a lot of the patients are not open to me telling them the truth about what happened to them. And then on top of that, I get 30 minutes with somebody, maybe 45, and then I turn them over to an ER full of doctors and nurses who either A, believe in all this stuff, you know, which I do have coworkers that still believe in the stuff, which is beyond me. They're the younger generation tends to be. The older of us, all the gray hairs, they're at work. We know what's going on. We talk amongst ourselves. We share between ourselves what we've seen. Some of those employees, some of those coworkers took the jab themselves, and they had ill effects. They won't take it anymore. So that's where we're at on that.
Well, I got a little story, and I may have shared this before. Back right before I was about to get out the Army, you know, do the retirement thing, I was still on jab. So there was different precautions I had to take to keep myself out of trouble. You know, because if anybody gets sick, it's from the unjabbed guy, right?
Right.
Even though I was the only one not testing positive for COVID, it was all my fault. And anyway, I was supposed to go help. I had a week-long thing where we rotated out, and every week a different master fitness trainer would come in and help people that needed to get off. You know, maybe they're overweight or maybe they couldn't pass a run. So we're trying to help them in a holistic approach as far as exercise and then kind of counseling them on diet, which I'm probably not the best guy to do that. But it was one of my duties anyway. So I show up and then our physician's assistant assigned to our unit was in charge of the program. And I show up and I tell him, hey, I'm feeling a little bit sick and I don't know what to do. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, well, if I've got COVID, I don't want to spread it to anybody. You know, yeah, I got to play the game. Like, you know, okay, yeah, it's COVID's a thing. Let's play the game. I said, so what do I do to keep myself out of trouble? Do I wear a mask while I'm in here? You know, because we're working out, lifting weights. Or he said, well, go to the hospital and get tested. So I go to the hospital. I get in there. I wait about an hour in the freaking ER because the sick call was full and they ended up pushing me to the ER. So I go to the ER. I wait there. I finally get in. And the point of the story is this is well into after multiple jabs, boosters. You know, we're in this game for a while. And the nurse comes in and starts talking to me. And she was kind of cussing under her breath about the mask. You know, the people who were pushing it were saying, this is BS. These things don't even work anyway. And I was like, and so I told her, I said, I'm here to get a COVID test. And she said, COVID's not a thing anymore. She said, it's RSV now. I'm like, yeah, really? You just went through all this crap. COVID's going to kill us all. And now it's like, oh, now RSV. You're talking about how stupid that was, how stupid the mask was, how it was all BS. But now RSV is going to get us all, right? And they didn't even COVID test me. They didn't test me for anything. They gave me some Tylenol and stuff, told me to go home for the rest of the day. Even the doctor, when he came in to talk to me, same thing, complained about it, how it was all BS and they don't need to be wearing masks and they're tired of it. But RSV is going to get us all. So I wonder if those two individuals, once they start pushing out COVID X or whatever, are they going to be out there in the lobby again, enforcing mask mandates and 6-foot distancing? Are they going to fall for it again?
So let me give you a little story. At the gym about, I don't know, 2 weeks ago or so, I've got a friend at the gym that I work out with that he's an ER doc at one of our local hospitals. I've known him since long before the whole COVID mess. I've known him for years. And he, in fact, we kind of struck up a friendship because he was a paramedic before he became a doctor. So he was a paramedic over here in DeKalb County, which is inner city. It's pretty busy. So, So we struck up a friendship. Well, I asked him specifically because of this Emory hospital system mask mandate that just came into effect about 3 weeks ago. I asked him specifically, I said, Doc, what, you know, are you guys doing going to do the mask mandates again there at your hospital? And he looked at me and he said, I sure hope not. I said, wait a minute. I said, who's making the rules? If you're not the one, you're the one, you're the ER doc. Who's making the rules? Who's giving you rules? He said, well, that kind of gets handed down from the clinical direction department. I said, well, who gives them the orders? He said, well, that comes from the hospital CEO. I said, so ultimately, and I was clarifying it for myself. I said, so ultimately, the bureaucrat that runs the hospital, the businessman, makes the medical decision. And he said, hey, I like working there. You do what you got to do. That's what he said. I like working there. You do what you got to do. So that's where we're at on the people that know what's going on, but they don't want to lose their job. They don't want to lose their career. Now, I'm not in that position. I've got a big mouth.
Yeah.
But financially, I'm in a good spot. You know, I know that I'm blessed. You know, I have my regular day-to-day bills, you know, my insurance, you know, car insurance, utilities, but I don't have a house payment. I don't have a car payment. So it allows me to be a little more risky with what I say.
You know, I was in that position as well. Yeah, my retirement was on the line, but my wife and I don't know what prompted us to do this, but we decided to put all our money into paying down debt. We were completely debt free. We had, you know, my dad passed away and left us some money, and we were smart with it. So we had, I mean, I would say a couple years. If they kicked me out of the military with no benefits, we could have got by for a couple of years till we figure out what to do. And that really did help. I think, honestly, I think God gave us a premonition that we needed to think ahead. And even to the point of buying a house here a year and a half before I retired, just in case they gave me the pink slip, you know, and we had to get out of Dodge right away. We were prepared for all that. And I think that was not by chance, because we were preparing for this before COVID. We had no idea this was going to happen. So that does make it easier. And when you're talking about people that are worried about losing their jobs, they've managed to get everybody in so much debt that, you know, 2 months without an income and you're on the streets.
Correct. Well, not to cut you off, but in my experience on the streets, man, there's no help for these homeless folks. And there's, I get it. They're in a bad spot. A lot of them get to the point where they are addicted to all kinds of drugs. You know, they, but I talked to I sit down and talk to these people. I ask them, how did you get here? How did you get to where you're at? And it usually starts off most of the time with a bad relationship, led to drugs, led to streets, and that's where they're at. But when I take these people to the hospital don't want them. You know, they're already they're busy. The hospitals are busy these days. The ERs are busy. There's a lot of new sick people.
But during COVID, they had to shut down entire wards to say they were at capacity.
Well, during COVID, I was sent home many, many, many shifts because there was no work. I remember pulling up into the parking lot at work, and there would be 3-4 ambulances sitting in the parking lot with people sitting in them just playing on their phones because the other 5 or 6 ambulances were out sitting in the street with no calls. People were afraid to call 911. There were still people calling for chest pains and falls and your general stuff that we always have seen for my entire 20 years in the business. We have a stable type of call. You know, we get falls a lot. Old people fall down. Young people fall off bikes. I mean, we've seen that stuff for years. But the stuff that I've seen over the past since 2021 has been nothing that I've seen in the past. I started in 2004. So yeah. There's your baseline.
You have a baseline of what's normal. And
that's what makes a good, in my opinion, that's what makes a very good EMS person, somebody who can detect changes in trends. Because I have to look at my patient and see minuscule things that change with that patient. might be just a something odd that they say. Maybe they use the past tense of a verb instead of a present tense. You know, those are little things, but those are clues to what might be going on, you know, mentally. You know, maybe they've got a neurologic issue. Maybe their lab values are off. Ammonia levels are high. They're confused. It's just what makes a good medical professional is somebody who can spot changes in trends. And this has been a massive change in trends. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. Well, you know, like I'm not saying I go to work and I'm just back to back to back hauling people injured by vaccines. I don't think so, but I am seeing way more people that are sick younger than they should be with chronic conditions that they shouldn't have.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you can see the question on the screen there, if you know who that is, but number six asked something I thought I would throw it up.
Sure.
It says, I'd love to hear your thoughts on John Jones's brother getting medically kidnapped. I don't know about that.
I don't know about that, but I do. I can speak to the medical kidnapping though. Okay. Let's say, well, this one's anecdotal. You know, this wasn't eyewitness from me, but the partner that I work with often, he was relaying to me a couple shifts ago that he hauled. Go on.
Is that cray cray? Cray?
Yeah. Yeah, go on. She's hungry. But he was relaying to me. He took a patient to one of the psychiatric facilities, and he's asking the guy, you know, he's talking to the guy in the back of the ambulance on the way, and he asked him, he said, hey, what's your favorite book of the Bible? And, you know, the guy's like right on it. You know, but the guy named off two or three books from the Old Testament, and turns out the guy, you know what the guy's offense was? You know why he was being sent to a mental facility?
Why?
He prayed too loudly in public. That was documented officially as a form of psychosis. If you pray too loudly in public. Now, you know, I don't know if the guy was homeless. I don't know if the guy was, you know, homeless people tend to be eccentric. but for praying too loudly in public to be a form of psychosis, that to me was a red flag. I've never seen.
Well, I know there's a ton of stories that have been shared. The medical kidnapping was on full display throughout COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, DNR orders put on without family, you know, signing off on it, not being able to see medications, people getting remdesivir that, you know, said they did not want remdesivir, people mm-hmm. getting vented that said, I do not want to be put on a vent. Right. And people died from that.
Yes.
Kidnapping. So that's something that we know is out there. There's stories of it. I don't personally know anybody that it happened to, but, you know, okay, in our circles, so, you'll hear stories with eyewitnesses.
So another one, I'm pretty sure I put it in the Substack at some point. I was standing at the nurse's desk doing my paperwork, and to my left, you know, there's a patient's room, and I'm listening to, it was an older man, older gentleman, probably late 70s, early 80s, and his son, which is probably in his 40s or 50s. And they're joking about, the old man was joking about stopping at a gentleman's club on the way home, you know, when he got discharged, which I thought was funny. You know, this guy's 80 years old talking about going to the gentleman's club. Well, then the ER doc comes in a couple minutes later and informs this gentleman that he tested positive for COVID. We have to admit you. And, you know, people just take that as law. That I have to admit you. You have to be admitted to the hospital. And they just go with it. You don't have to do anything. If you're mentally competent, everybody out there, take note of this. If you're mentally competent, if you can answer questions like, what year is it? How many quarters are in $1.50? Stuff like that. Simple stuff. You can make your own decisions. You don't have to do anything that a hospital or a doctor tells you to do. That's your freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And they will tell you different.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you this. They will let you believe different. They won't tell you the truth. They will omit the truth.
That's kind of like when I have stepkids, and the middle one is a daughter. She didn't live with us until she came to live with us in Colorado Springs. And she came without her shot record. So when I'm trying to enroll her in school, they were like, she's got to go get all these shots. And I was like, the hell she does. She's already got her shots. And they said she had to get him again. And I was like, no. And they wouldn't tell me directly that they wouldn't allow her in the school if she didn't have her shots. And they didn't give me any workaround. They just said, well, you know, that's just something. It's a policy. It's a policy. You know, the kids are supposed to have their shots, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to go over your head. I'll talk to the superintendent. I'll talk to whoever I got to. And then all of a sudden the tune changed. And then, oh, well, okay, they're not required, which I think now Colorado does require them now. But you basically could do an exemption for religious or medical or whatever. And because, you know, I made the point to say, you know, my tax money pays for this school, right? So this is my school that I pay for. And you're going to tell me I can't use a service that I pay taxes for, mm-hmm. you know, and I went on about that for a while, you know me. Anyway, they ended up saying, well, okay, if she doesn't have these shots and she gets sick, then she'll have to stay home. And I said, what do you think kids do when they're sick? They stay home, whether they got shots or not. You're supposed to stay home and eat your chicken noodle soup and stuff like that. So it was complete BS. And I called them on it. But like you said, they're not going to come out and tell you that. They're going to let you believe something else. And they're not mm-hmm. going to directly lie, because that can get them in trouble.
Correct. That's why I corrected myself. I haven't heard anybody directly lie. But they admit the truth. They will let them believe, lead them to believe one thing when that's not true. They didn't directly lie, but they omitted the truth. That is not informed consent.
No, it's not. It's not informed. But anyway, we've spent a lot of time on this. I am going to talk about this, what Six asked about. And I wasn't aware of this story, so thanks for that. I'm going to check this out after the show, Six. NFL and Raiders star Chandler Jones claims he was taken to a mental health hospital against his will by the Las Vegas Fire Department and forcibly injected after concerning posts online. And his online post, so this is a week after he posted a rant accusing the owner of the Raiders, Mark Davis, of mm-hmm. protecting the identity of a man he claims molested his goddaughter. So right there, if that's true, that's weaponizing the system to what, cover something up. That's kind of weird. And interesting, it's a mental health hospital. So be careful of that, I guess, going forward. What you say and post online or pray in public could land you in a medical institution.
It's a very subjective, you know, it's a very gray area, the mental health thing. Honestly, it's one of the more difficult EMS calls that I run is mental health, because now I'm put in the position of determining if you're not able to competently make your own decisions. And that is a very, very hard thing to decide sometimes, you know, because people can be manic and still answer everything perfectly, but they're still not acting right. They might be, like I had one a couple of days ago, 25-year-old female, screaming at the sky, you know, out in the yard, pacing in circles all day, just manic episode, but she could answer everything appropriately. Definitely wasn't acting normally. That one I did take to the hospital. She was not right. And I think was the right decision.
I've seen some crazy episodes, just in passing, going to the store or whatever, and there'll be the police out there circled around somebody, ran in, and turns out a lot of times that's drug use.
Correct.
But hey, I got to throw this in here. Doug put it in chat. So hey, if you're watching this or listening to it, Doug Lug, he's a friend of ours in the community. He says his girlfriend has cancer. It's an interesting journey with her and how slow the medical community is. So I just wanted to put that out there so we can pool our prayers together and pray for his girlfriend.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yep. Anyway, hey, let's move along. I wanted to talk a little bit about your homesteading project. Okay. I really would love to get you and Rhonda Tate on together to compare notes, since you're from the same geographical area.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
But tell us about what you've been doing the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 months.
Okay. So really I've been trying for 3 or 4 years to have a productive garden. And I eventually got aggravated with that and built a greenhouse, which has been great. I wish it were bigger. That's my only complaint with the greenhouse. I didn't realize how much you can get from such a small space. But I was also trying a regular garden behind my garage, And for 3 or 4 years, man, the deer decimated it. They'd leave a little bit, but
now you have deer. I want to point this out. You have deer there, but you're still considered a city area, right?
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. It's I'm in the Gwinnett County, Atlanta area. So I
just wanted to point that out because if people are thinking about homesteading, a lot of times you think you got to go get 20 acres. You can do a small scale in your backyard, even in the city, if the city allows it, right?
Yeah, the only thing I ran into with the city here, aside from outside fires, I attracted the attention of the fire department recently with that. But roosters, anything that makes a lot of noise. You know, there was a there's a city ordinance against having roosters, but you can have chickens.
And you did quail for quite
a while. Well, I did quail because there was a law against or a rule against chickens. Chickens. You couldn't have chickens, period, until December of 2022. But I'd already bought the quail like 4 months prior to that. So.
And you went through that whole feed scenario that was a big conspiracy theory, right?
Correct, yeah. I had issues with the Purina feed. I did not get egg production when I was feeding the Purina. It was 16% crumbles is what it was, non-medicated. And, you know, they ate it fine. They grew fine. They just didn't produce. So eventually I switched them off of that and onto this Faithway, I believe is the name of the company. But it's someplace over in Alabama, I believe. And I can go to a local feed store and get that feed. With that feed, man, within 2 weeks, I had egg production. And I haven't had, they lay several a day now. So now we're going into winter, so that should slow down. During winter, they tend to either slow or stop. I mean,
you were telling me before that when you would go to the feed store and stuff like that, you were getting ready to ask the guy about the feed.
Oh, no, I did. I did ask the guy. He's an older fellow, you know, probably in his 60s, late 60s. And I asked him, I said, hey, I don't want to sound weird or anything, but have you guys had anybody coming in here talking about the feed? And he stopped me. He said, he cut me off. He said, your chickens aren't laying eggs, are they? I said, no. I have quail, but they're not laying eggs. He said,
and yep. He's probably not one of those tinfoil hat guys that are digging around the internet. So this is something that was actually happening.
No, this is rural. I had to drive 30 minutes north of here. This is a rural feed store. This guy, I'm sure he's got internet, but no, he's not a tinfoil hat guy. He's just a good old boy. And while we were having that conversation, there was another couple walks up and they said, hey, don't mean to butt into your conversation, but the guy relayed his experience and he said he has a flock of chickens. He separated them out into two groups. One group he fed Purina, the other group he fed the Faithway feed. He said it took about 2 to 3 days. The chickens stopped laying eggs in the Purina group and the other group kept on. He said he switched the feeds. Opposite problem happened. So the problem switched. He said, that's enough for me. I'm not going to use this Purina feed.
And I looked into that during that whole, you know, conspiracy thing going on because they released a statement saying that they had not changed their recipe at all. So I don't know what it is. We didn't change anything. Well, no, what they did, if you dig through and look, they sourced the ingredients from another location.
All right. Narrow Way right here says Tractor Supply dealt with this heavily last year. Yeah. That's what the old man told me. He said, I've never gotten so many customers that they're all coming over from Tractor Supply. So yeah, you're right. Narrow Way.
All right, so back to the garden. That I thought that was an important update to show people who maybe were hollering about this a year ago, and they were told that they were crazy. Look, you're not alone. We got
to keep the truth. There was something to it. I don't know if it was a change in the amount of protein, if there was a pharmaceutical added to the stuff. I don't know. I don't know the reason.
If I had to speculate, because all I could track it down to, they said the recipe didn't change. Well, that's, you know, how many cups of flour, how many, you know, spoonfuls of sugar. But if I buy a different sugar, then technically, I guess the recipe's changed. So my speculation is that whatever they did, wherever they sourced maybe a cheaper version of whatever to mix in there, maybe it was GMO, maybe it was a bad batch, I don't know. But that was the only change I could track down, was they said they had sourced some stuff, same amount, just different location, you know?
Yeah. I don't know, man. I look at the labels and I wonder how much truth is in the label. I don't know.
All right. So back to the garden though. You said something. Number one, you talked about an accidental discovery you made that I want you to share, the dealing with the deer. And then also I found it interesting that once you covered you did a enclosed garden, you had a lot better luck. Mm-hmm. So that tells me there must be something coming down potentially, or maybe just because it's a more controlled environment.
That may be. Yeah, it may be a more controlled environment. Your temperature is controlled, your sunlight amount is controlled, because I have a shade that I can put over the thing. It's a lot more, you get to dictate the conditions a lot more than in the garden. So what I noticed with the garden, every year I've tried 3 or 4 years, maybe more. But I've seriously tried for 3 or 4 years. And I've learned lessons every year, stuff that I've adjusted and things that I leave alone, plant, choice of vegetables. That's another thing. And one of the things that I accidentally did, was the garden layout. And I really didn't have any, really didn't think about that. But what I found was, this year I accidentally created a garden shape where all the good stuff kind of looked like it was inside of a dead end, and the deer didn't want to go in that. So I had my tomatoes on one side and they made a big wall, and then my camper was just on the other side of the tomatoes. So that really was a big wall. On the other side was great big tall row of green beans the entire length of the garden. And then I had corn. And the corn made like the dead end portion. So what ended up happening is the deer only grazed on that one sacrificial row of green beans. They didn't touch anything else. So that was, man, that was an accidental find. I talked to a guy at the gym about that lives up in Dahlonega, and he gardens and stuff. And he was laughing. He told me, he said, yeah, that's, he said, you made it look like the, once they got in there, they'd be trapped. They won't go in there. So I thought that was interesting.
All right, cool. Cool stuff to know. I'm going to throw that one in my pocketbook for knowledge whenever I finally start growing. I got a problem right here. I've really got to get up on my property. I wanted to build a workshop back behind the house here because I got big enough land, and it's just straight bedrock under here. So
that's not bad, though. When I did my my greenhouse, that's raised beds inside the greenhouse.
That's what I've got to do here, is, and it's a hill, so it'd have to be like a tiered, like a step, kind of like the Mayans did with their hills or whatever. They tiered. I think it was the Mayans, right? That tiered it off and gardened on that.
Right? Yeah, Aztecs and Mayans both.
Yeah, but I'll get there eventually. So anyway, let's move on to the actual topic before we run out of time. This was good catching up. You've been out of the mix for a while. And tell us about this. You sent me this video. What's this guy's name again? John Campbell?
Yeah, John Campbell. So John Campbell's an interesting case for me, because back in 2020, when all this COVID mess started making, everybody here, we all watched the news. We all saw it happen. John Campbell was one of the bigger pushers of the COVID mess. You know, he was pushing the virus. He pushed the masks. He pushed the shots. But he started digging into the data, after the fact. And back in 2022 or so, I kind of on a whim just went and started watching some of his videos again, see where he's at now. Apparently, he got banned on YouTube for saying the wrong thing, and that woke him up a little bit. Now, from what I understand, John Campbell still may not be 100% on the origin of the virus or even what it is. But he is presenting great data on the vaccine and the effects. So what he's done is one of his latest videos was a video on this coalition of nations, 16 or 17 different nations. I think David referenced a different story referencing the same study. But what it does, it goes through all these different 16, 17 different nations, and it lists week by week and age group by age group excess death rates and what we're seeing. I think it begins in 2015 and goes till present.
I did notice playing with the database, though, it starts 2015 up to current. But mm-hmm. there's really, for most of the stuff you try to filter, there's no data prior to. I know that they know what the average excess, maybe they just haven't filled that, you know, backfilled that data yet. Because just to let people know, what this database does is it's tracking excess deaths. And then it also has how many excess because of COVID. And we did something interesting with that. We're going to show you in a minute. But the average, I think the documents you found said that this is a 5-year average. So when they talk about the excess, this is how many based off of what we expect to see over, you know, from the last 5 years. And so it breaks it down by whole number and then percentage above or below what they expect to see. So I don't know. Should I just play a little bit of it so people?
Yeah, play a little bit. It'll explain it a little better than what we're doing.
Okay, I'm gonna go up full screen. Let me know if you get an echo, because
I can mute myself.
Okay.
Now, to begin with, this is the data here from the United Kingdom, from the OECD. Now, this is the first week of the year, so that's up to January the 7th. That's up to January the 14th, 21st. So they're the weeks of the year. And these numbers here are the excess deaths. So 3,123 excess deaths, 4,164 excess deaths, 22.5%, 26.4%, 19.8%. And we see this all the way through the year, deaths being above what we would expect, apart from slightly below on week 10, slightly below on week 14, and slightly below on week 429. But otherwise, all the other weeks where there's data, this is basically up to week 30, which is roughly the end of July, 36,316 excess deaths. It is clear the excess deaths were not limited to 2021, 2022. They are carrying on in.
All right, let's talk about this for a minute. So let me get him off there. So the numbers he was showing, and you're still muted, Handy, just to let you know.
Okay.
Yeah, so the number he's showing, that was for not for the U.S. What was that particular?
And that was the U.K.
Yeah, the U.K. So if you watch the whole video, I'm not going to steal this man's intellectual property. You know, we're just using it as an example. But he goes through country by country. And what's interesting is the U.S., we didn't have a single negative month or negative week. It was all positives in the U.S. And it seems that the Western nations that really mandated the jab or really pushed the jab have a lot of excess deaths, whereas other countries that didn't really latch on to the jab actually had negative.
Correct.
So let's talk about that. What do you think about all that? And this is data. Like you said, you can think you want. I like to watch this guy because he's very good about seeing trends and picking apart data and making it make sense to the everyday person. So I thought that was interesting. I had never heard of this database before. You're the one that turned me on to it. It appears it must be relatively new because they don't have data going back to like 2000 or anything like that. Starts off at 2015. A lot of the data is still missing for those early few years. And then around 2020, 2019, then the data is all filled in up to current, almost to current week, you know? So interesting.
Yeah. So that is, you know, we were talking before the show, and I'll say it again. I've been very careful to limit, you know, what I put out as opinion versus what I see. And it's not my opinion that we're seeing more death in the field of all ages than we've ever seen before. You know, for context, I've said it before, but for context, I began my career in 2004 in EMS. I'm still current. And before 2021, I had two adult patients in my entire career that dropped dead for no reason, sudden cardiac arrest. Those were two patients that we couldn't look at and say they overdosed. They had a prior medical condition. Anything, trauma. In fact, if you go back to the white pages for EMS, it was the accidental death and dismemberment. It was all about trauma. I mean, it was EMS has been about trauma from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's what we see a lot of. It's one of the more common things. And but things have changed. You know, we're seeing what I'm seeing personally. I won't say we, what I'm seeing. What I'm seeing personally is younger people with chronic medical conditions that we shouldn't see. You know, you're seeing neurologic issues. We're seeing organ failure. I mean, we're seeing all kinds of stuff that we should not see. Clots. I mean, we're still seeing that. We're not seeing it in the numbers. The immediate, let me say this, the immediate people dropping dead, not seeing it as often. Now it's still happening. We had over at one of the gyms, next zone south of me. Yes. Was it yesterday? Day before yesterday. It was yesterday. I worked yesterday. That was yesterday. He was 29 or 30 years old, dropped dead, working out at the gym. I mean, we don't see these things. We never did before. And these, you know, you think about it, these people, especially at the gym, a lot of those people, they're in pretty good shape. Now, I didn't run that call. I didn't run that call. I heard it on the radio. But, you know, you've got a young person exercising, and they just fall over dead. And then what we're seeing, let me put this out there. For any other medical professional out there that is dealing with this, persistent ventricular fibrillation, we're seeing, and I've mentioned this for 2 years now, we're seeing, or at least for a year, when we get these cardiac arrests, when we give them the defibrillation and antiarrhythmic medications, amiodarone or lidocaine, they're not responding. Not the same. Not, you know, we would defibrillate somebody once or twice during a mega code, you know, where they're in cardiac arrest. But typically after that, either you get a pulse or you don't, and you just continue PCR or not PCR, CPR, Freudian slip there.
Yeah, continue PCR until you get a positive.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, the PCR comes after we get them to the hospital.
Yeah.
So, but they're not responding to this, to our treatments the same way they used to. Typically when you defibrillate somebody, they don't just go back into refractory V-fib. Not often. They typically go into a systole, or they'll go into like a pulseless electrical activity, PEA, what we call it. But this persistent V-fib where we're shocking 9, 10, 18 times. I mean, I shocked somebody 18 times once.
Holy cow.
On the way to the hospital. You know what it does in EMS when we have somebody go into V-fib. You know, your antiarrhythmics and your electrical therapy. I mean, that's in CPR. Those are the only things we can do. We can breathe for you, but without a pulse, that doesn't help. So,
well, I wanted to let's show the audience, because we're going to run out of time here, and I know you got somewhere to be, so we got to be.
Well, I'll hang over a little if we have to. I'll just show up late. I'm one of the higher ranks, so I just show up whenever.
Okay. Well, I'll try to end us on time. We got to end on time anyway, because America Unplugged, we have an extra hour to play with, but I won't keep you that long. But one thing I wanted to show was this. Let me pull this back into the screen. So in this database, this is the database that was referenced in the video, Mr. Campbell's video. And I found this interesting when you sent it to me, because you would assume that the excess deaths are from COVID. That's what you would assume if you're a sheeple out there believing what the media says. Say, oh my God, look at all these excess deaths. It's because COVID is still going on, blah, blah, blah. And that's how they'll sell it. And I know that's how they'll sell it, because here, if I zoom this in so people can see, and if you're listening, what we're looking at is we're looking at this OECD database that was talked about. So under these different things you can look at, they have all kinds of categories, so they're tracking a lot more than just excess deaths. That's just one of the things they track. So that falls under the COVID-19 health indicators. Okay, it makes sense, right? So they break that down. You could see the excess death by week. That's total excess death. And then you could see the COVID deaths by week. But what's missing from here is how much of those excess deaths are not COVID. That's the elephant in the room for me right there. You're talking about excess deaths. Let's scare me with some big numbers. And then look at how much is because of COVID. Well, I did the thing that they didn't do. And I did some simple subtraction. So you can see here, I imported this. This is just the United States now. And right here, this is weeks 1 through 30. And you can see there's not a single negative number in there. And then I also included percentages because I don't know if this number is per capita or it's a solid number. I don't know. But the percentages are important because that's what we would expect to see any given, you know, five-year period. Then here's the ones from COVID-19 in this next column here. Here's the percentages. And then I just did the simple math. Excel did it for me, so I didn't make a mistake. This is the non-COVID. So this is for some other reason. We don't know what it is. I'm sure they'll end up saying it's from long COVID or something COVID related. But right now, we don't know what these extra deaths are because of. And this is the percentages. So I went ahead and graphed them out over here. And I'll zoom in a little bit. So this here is total excess death, the light blue. You can see excess death numbers. And then the COVID. Now, the COVID's almost down to negligible. So is that because they're not PCR testing or they're just understanding? But this real concerning number is this dark blue line. This is the ones that aren't accounted for. We have no idea what these people are dying from. And it kind of jives with what Handy talks about with just, you know, stuff we've never seen before. Young people dying, sudden cardiac arrest, aneurysms, a lot of different things. Again, this is by percentage and the graph looks pretty much the same. Total deaths, unexplained. Pretty high. We got, and you're looking at the average. I actually did the average here. So all cause, the average per week was 49.27. And then this is to project out to the end of the year. I know that's not the best way to do it, but it gives us an idea. So projected annually this year, total excess deaths are about a little over a quarter million. Okay. The ones we could say are COVID, meaning a positive PCR test or a clinical diagnosis, or a motorcycle accident, and the guy tested positive for COVID. Average per week is 1490 with a projected annual of about 77,500. So they're saying by the end of the year, 77,500 people will die extra because of COVID. But what they don't say is that, well, the ones that aren't COVID, we have 178, almost 179,000 extra deaths projected for this year that are not going to be COVID related. So what do you think about that, Handy?
Well, again, I speak from personal experience. What I see, it jives, I think, with what we've been seeing in EMS over the past, you know, since 2021. That's what I got banned on Twitter. January 25th, I was watching the David Knight Show and I had just gotten off work, and we had that night, specifically that night, I had two back-to-back calls, the same nursing home, for these patients that were in, basically looked like septic shock or cardiogenic shock. They were definitely in some sort of shock. You know, they're, and for all of you out there, you know, people use the term shock pretty loosely, but when we use it in the medical field, it really means really low blood pressure. I mean, that's typically what it is. When somebody has hypotension to the point of being critical, I mean, that's, whether it be a volume issue, a pump issue, or a container issue, you end up with what we call shock. I mean, that's, there's also psychogenic shock, and that's typically the one you see on movies where somebody experiences something traumatic and then they're just frozen and they say, oh, they're in shock. That's kind of a misnomer. Psychogenic shock usually presents with fainting.
One person, and like I said, I think they're going to chalk this up to long COVID. I know you do you ask the questions when correct, you can. Yeah. You ask them if they're jabbed, if they're boosted, or whatever.
Always. And everybody out there, and I'm going to take an opportunity to speak with anybody in the medical community out there that might be listening. These tests, they're ridiculous. Then I don't know, man.
Well, what concerns me, and we, Handy and I talked about this before the show. you know, he can give his firsthand experience. And then we got people that come up with the numbers. And if you were to look at a, if you wanted to make a case to say this could potentially be jab related, I would say that the number that they blame on COVID, which I, you know, why would you not test positive for a COVID if your jab is making the protein, the spike protein, you would think that would spark a positive test, right? But you'll see those numbers are starting to dwindle down. If I was to bring that back up on the screen, all cause deaths are kind of still hovering around 40 some odd, or 4,000 some odd per week, which is a lot. And then the ones that they say are COVID related are kind of tapering down, which to me would say that I guess those who were, if I were to assume it was because of the jab, and I think there's a good case for that, because if you go to court, you have your forensics experts with data and you have your eyewitnesses, right? That's how you lock a case down solid and beyond a reasonable doubt. So Handy would be our eyewitness here, what he sees on the ground, and the data, the numbers are expert, right? Our forensics experts that say, hey, these are the actual numbers reported by CDC, NIH, things like that. We're just peeling them apart and we're putting the eyewitness account with the numbers to see if they match up. So that's kind of what we're doing here. We're not making any wild claims, but there is a correlation there that warrants further research. And as we see these supposed COVID deaths tailoring off, my fear is that they're going to get down so low that they're going to reintroduce a new jab or a new variant, and we're going to see those numbers go back up if it, in fact, is mRNA related.
Well, that brings up, and you may have it. You may have it there. That
I do
brings
have
up,
it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That leads us into that.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I don't know, speculation. My question is that story telling us what they've already done? Because McCullough's finding this stuff 12 months after injection.
Yeah. This is part of Project Next Gen, which I didn't know about. And they've invested a lot of money in, it's kind of a vaccine to rule them all, you know? And you said that this is this the one that has the self-replicating technology?
Yes. Yeah. They call it SA-mRNA, and it's self-replicating. So they basically, they put it in you a little amount. It multiplies itself.
Self-amplifying mRNA COVID-19 vaccine candidate.
Yes. That's the word. They use amplifying instead of replicating. Okay. But if you read it, that's what it is.
And if you look into some stuff that Gates has worked on with his, you know, because he's the world's doctor, what an idiot. But he's on the record saying that he wants to vaccinate everybody in the world as part of IA 2030, Immunization Agenda 2030. And one of the goals is to make a vaccine that replicates. And it's basically a man-made virus. So I vaccinate somebody and then they, through contact, vaccinate somebody else. So it's basically uninformed consent against your will. You're being vaccinated. And if you look at the construction of this mRNA shot, it is a man-made virus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a virus is a protein shell that has an RNA message in it, and it has some way to penetrate the cell and get that RNA message into a human cell to then replicate. That's exactly what the COVID-19 vaccine does. It's a lipid nanoparticle which protects the RNA message, and then that also allows it to mesh with the cell and then get that inserted, and then your cell says, oh, here's some additional instructions, we're going to make this as well, and you start cranking out proteins. It's exactly what a virus does. Exactly.
Yes.
And the problem is, yes, you're going to get an immune response just like as if you got sick, but if your body doesn't shut it off, that's in my opinion, that's why you're seeing, and it's actually, there's documentation on it, not just my opinion, that's why you're seeing a lot of immune problems right now. Autoimmune disease kind of stuff. Because people's immune systems are just wore out. You've been fighting this thing that they said was just going to stay local and turn itself off, but they're finding these proteins all over the place in the body, concentrated in certain organs. So we know it didn't shut off. Does it ever shut off?
So that's an interesting point. You know, if it never shuts off and your body's constantly fighting it, you know, inflammation has been one of the bigger medical issues around for a long time. You know, arthritis, that's inflammation, you know, myocarditis, inflammation. Even the plaque in your arteries a lot of times is because you've had inflammation there and your body's repairing, trying. So, you know, what we're seeing, if that's the case, if that's the mechanism of action with this vaccine, you know, then it, I think just logically it would be causing this spike protein perpetual would be causing areas of inflammation that are perpetual, mm-hmm. you know? So you're, again, your body's perpetually damaged just over and over and over at a microscopic level.
Oh yeah. And I guess we, I guess the real question is the why. What, why would people want to create something they know would cause harm? And it's looking more and more through, you know, circumstantial evidence or whatever. You look at countries, we've talked about this. We've talked about fertility rates dropping in Western mm-hmm. nations where we do a lot of vaccination. And they're on the rise in countries that Gates would like to get to that he can no longer go to. He's banned from there. But they're, you know, their fertility levels are on the rise. And they have a different way of thinking about that. I've looked at their philosophy, him and Melinda. They think that they have more children because they expect half of the children to die because they're not vaccinated and they want to have children to take care of when they get older. And I guess that's a valid thought process. But really, I don't know. That's really reaching. You want to talk about some circumstantial stuff. That's some circumstantial thinking. Just to justify getting in there and making a bunch of money selling vaccines to these countries. But and they do it behind the guise of being a philanthropist, which is really a tax shelter for them. Plus, they always make money on the back end. So, you know, look at the motivation. So getting back to motivation, Vince Agnelli sent me some stuff. And as to the why, I think I may know why. And just so you know, this let me put this back up. Project Next Gen, actually from HHS.gov. This is a legit thing. They're looking at making a vaccine to rule them all. Some of this stuff don't make sense. Better protection, longer lasting vaccines. Okay, I thought this thing was 100% safe and effective, right? So why would we need, apparently it is. It's not. Faster, cheaper, rapidly deployable. So they're basically looking at a way to make a stronger vax, they can get out quicker, cheaper, and to more people. And it's a pan-coronavirus vaccine. So it's supposed to be any coronavirus whatsoever. And it'll be an annual booster, I guarantee you. They've talked about that. It'll be like your annual flu shot. So why? Yeah. You know, well, check this out. Hold on, I got to find this. So Vince Agnelli sent me this. It's about replacement migration. And this is a legit document from the United Nations. They don't have some, you know, they're not sitting there with the cat, a bald guy with a cat stroking it, telling you their evil plan here. It's just something that tells you they've thought about it. This was released back in 2001, which means they've already been looking at this stuff to get their data. And it basically talks about the dropping populations, and I would throw into that fertility rates in certain nations. And looking at, you know, how are we going to keep those populations up because they need to have workers to keep, you know, boost the economy and things like that. So they're looking at bringing in people from other countries. And look at these countries they were looking at: France, Germany, Italy, Japan, South Korea, Russia, which is interesting because maybe that's why we're at odds with Russia right now, because they don't want to be part of this. UK, United States, Europe, European Union. So they're already anticipating that we're going to have population decline, and they're looking at, you know, displacing people from around the world and putting them in to fill those numbers. And just so you know, it's not BS for the U.S. because this is the U.N. doing this. The U.S. just released in 2022 update on the collaborative update, meaning this is something that's been going on, the collaborative migration management strategy. And this looks pretty innocent on its face. It's kind of talking about, you know, we got people flooding over the border, but and what do we do about it? You know, and they're talking about aid for this, aid for that. They're working on streamlining the legalization process and things like that. But nothing in here mentions getting rid of the magnet, closing the border. So they basically want these people to come over, and they're trying to deal with how do we do it legally. That's pretty much what I got out of this long document. So there is a replacement. There is a replacement strategy. Now, was it by design? I mean, there's no question about that because they've contemplated this. They've crunched the numbers. They've tried to figure out how to legally do it. How do we get people, you know, what do you call refugees from these other places of the world that we caused problems in, right? So we destabilized their nations and we installed a leader and now it's a crap hole and they want to come here. And then we throw the little carrots out, the welfare, everything like that. During a freaking campaign, they announced the border is going to be wide open. People are coming over with Biden t-shirts, prepaid freaking plastic, what do you call it, prepaid cards. I mean, they're getting transportation paid for. They're getting everything. And it's horrible for them because they get dropped off here and they might wind up homeless on the streets. But the idea is to get people here. I think it's more intentional. I don't think it's dealing with a problem that happened organically. I think they're intentionally doing it. Now, is it because they're killing people off and they want to replace us? Or is it because they see that there's a problem and they're trying to mitigate against it early? That I'd have to speculate on. But yeah. All right, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, there was that news story, what was he, 95, 96 years old, that veteran that was kicked out of a New York nursing home just this week to make room for illegal migrants or migrants, whatever they want to call them. I don't know. but yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, what they need to get rid of our old people. And if you look at those numbers, those excess data numbers, the 70s, you know, 60s plus, again, following kind of follows that, actuarial table because the older you get, the more feeble we get. That's just nature. Yeah. Little things become big things as we get older. You know, a UTI can become critical for somebody that's 25 years old. A UTI, a few antibiotics, you're fine. But somebody 73, man, you might end up face down in your bathroom, almost dead.
Yeah. If I were to throw the tinfoil hat back on and look at, if I would just assume, because the UN has known about this, the US has known about this, they've known about the decline in fertility in Western nations. They've kind of set the stage for mass migration as a replacement method. They've talked about it. If I was to assume that was nefarious, I would say the motivation behind it would be they can't keep up with their obligations when it comes to Social Security.
We've known that for a while.
Well, yeah. What have they done? They've raised the age. They haven't kept the payouts up with the cost of inflation. So basically it was money they forcefully took from you and they don't want to give it back. And I brought something up in the chat the other day. If let's just say that, I die a year before I draw Social Security. Well, all that money is supposed to be in an account for me somewhere, right? Why don't my kids inherit that money?
Oh, my dad died at 62, 3 weeks after his 62nd birthday. That money is all gone.
My dad passed 1 month before his retirement date.
Yeah, there you go.
But the thing is that's great for the government if you can't draw it and then you die because they get to, like, I wouldn't say they get to keep the money because the money's already gone.
Yeah,
but they don't have to account for why that money's gone. So this is one way you bring in all these young people that they're going to work to pay into the system eventually once they're legalized and they're paying taxes. And even a lot of the Dreamers that are technically not legal, they fall under DACA or whatever, they're paying taxes too. So you got people that really can't draw on it, but they're paying into it, but it's not going to be enough. It's not going to be fast enough. So let's put something out there. And like I said, I'm speculating this. I'm assuming that this is nefarious in this scenario. Let's put something out there that say it's going to really attack the children and old kids, really attack the children and old kids, right? But it actually kills elderly. But it really kills the elderly. You've just done away with a major liability. And now you have all these new people coming in that are going to eventually pay into a system to kind of fill those coffers back up. Because right now, what do we got going on? The boomers are all starting to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no money for them.
No.
I mean, it's a shame. I think that there should be legislation passed that says if you want to opt out of the Social Security system, then the government needs to refund every penny they took from you and adjust for inflation, just or interest, just like as if that was in some kind of a savings account or something that actually paid interest. Do it at the rate, that IRS would charge you interest if you owed them money, right? And then let me take care of my own retirement. And then there wouldn't be no need to kill me off, because
I think David might have talked about a little city out in Texas that tried that for a while, and the people that participated in that did really well, and then the government shut it off. So no, you have to do the Social Security. You can't do your, because what the city was doing was privatizing the retirement. They were taking the payments just like Social Security would. But that money accrued interest over the years, was put into an account, and then given back to the people when they retired. And they did really well. I mean, these people were, I think, were over $1 million in retirement when they got out. But the government caught wind of that and put an end to it.
Yeah, Harps is mentioning, you know, they don't want to pay out pensions. And that, and I kind of compared that, like, with Social Security. Oh, if you hear some noise, that's my grandson. He just woke up. He's trying to get in here. But yeah, the idea of someone dying and you never had to pay out their Social Security is like saying that somebody died and they had a 401k, and then the investment company just gets to keep that money instead of having a beneficiary. Or the same as if I have a life insurance policy and I die, and then they decide they don't want to pay it out. You know, you've got to find out who the beneficiary is and they get to pay. But it doesn't work that way with Social Security. And if it did, I mean, at least pay them out for what the average life expectancy should be. You know what I'm saying? At least do that. But they don't. So I don't know. I see the two things related with the mysterious deaths after the COVID jab. Now people aren't getting boosted as much. They're not buying into it. You see those COVID-related things dropping. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're dying of other things that could be jab related or maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know that if you just got jabbed, you're going to test positive for COVID. You have to, because you have these spike proteins floating around in you. That's the genetic material. That's what the PCR test looks for, is a little scrap of genetic material that multiplies it by a trillion times and says, oh yeah, he's got COVID. But anyway, that's my thoughts on it. I think that's all I had. I'll let you give your thoughts. And we'll start getting up out of here.
So this morning, well, actually last night I watched it, but I watched it again this morning. James Roguski and John Campbell did probably a 44-minute video on these new health regulations from the WHO that are coming in. I just wanted to mention it so that everybody else could go research it too, because according to James Roguski, this isn't the health treaty that everybody's been talking about. There are 300 new amendments that have been quietly slipped in that nobody's talked about, nobody's debated, it just hasn't been talked about. And the adoption, if Article 61, I guess that's part of the treaty, I don't know, with the WHO, but if the leader of each nation doesn't invoke Article 61, then by default, that nation falls into this treaty with these 300 extra amendments that basically, the way James presented it was, and you have to go check it out to make sure I get this right, but the way he presented it, the way I got it, was that a lot of what these regulations are doing are decreasing the amount of time that a nation is allowed to decide what they want to do in case of an emergency. So basically, James is saying, well, if there is a true emergency, then any nation can move quickly if they want to. He said, but what nations are doing, if they don't Article 61 out of this thing, it forces them to act quickly just based on a narrative.
Yeah, and that's an issue they addressed in the catastrophic contagion. I watched that earlier this week again, the highlight reel from that. Catastrophic contagion, for those who don't know, it was another tabletop that was done. I believe it was through Johns Hopkins again. The same folks that did Event 201 and Dark Winter and all that seemed to be predictive in nature, right? They seemed to predict, even down to naming the virus the same name, you know, with maybe one letter off, you know. But the catastrophic contagion, they had mentioned that all of these things they come up with were only suggestions. And that was one of the potential issues, is that people don't need to take those suggestions, even though United States seems to think it falls under their authority, the World Health Organization, you know. But no, that was one of the things addressed that didn't come out. I'll have to go back and see if I can find the entire transcript, which I haven't been able to find yet. I only found the highlights reel. But that's something that if you look back at 201, they addressed some of the problems that they had in their tabletop, and those problems were addressed. They were fixed before COVID-19 or during COVID-19. So if this was a problem they saw about, this is nothing but a suggestion and we hope they listen, guarantee you they're working on fixing it. And it sounds to me like what you just said is they've already done that kind of in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some other stuff too in that catastrophic contagion, but that was a big thing that just struck my mind. So,
yeah. So I don't know. Apparently you'd have to watch the video again. It's Roguski James is awesome. I mean, he's done some great research. Yeah, I'd encourage everybody to go look him up. He's got several different links. One called Screw the Who. That was a good one.
Screw the Who.
Yeah, Screw the Who. Yeah. He's really working hard right now to get signatures on these petitions to try to present to these government heads that are going to sit on their hands, because they've had 18 months, according to James. They've had 18 months to opt out so far, and they haven't. So we've got 2 more months. Nobody's even talking about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll leave that for everyone's food for thought. Let me give shout outs real quick to the folks in the chat. Tom popped in. What's going on, Tom? Make sure you're catching tonight. You can catch I always want to say hanging with Mr. Cooper, conspiring with Mr. Cooper.
No, you're hanging with Handy.
Hanging with Handy. That's why I always want to say that, because that's kind of your thing, is hanging with Handy. But hey, let me know in the chat if you are doing a show tonight, Tom. I'm going to assume you are. If people want to see where to find that show, go to the knightsofthestorm.com, to the friends tab. I'm sorry, to the schedule tab, and you'll see the time and links. We got Gardner Goldsmith in the chat. He does Liberty Conspiracy, also writes for MRC TV. Thank you, Gard. We had a great show on Thursday, just talking music with Audi. Again, Audi, he's Audi MRR. It's a radio station online. There's links on our website for that. Number six. Okay, so number six tells me that Tom will be live at 8. Just go to TNP if you want to see. Go to Rumble, I guess, and click on TNP. You can see it there. Who else do we got? And number six has his show. Just check out TNP platform. You'll see all of what six does. Let's see what else we got. We got Doug Lugs in chat. What's up, Doug? Syrian Girl. Always great to see you, Syrian Girl. There's a lot of people I'm probably going to miss here. Harps again was in there. Thanks for staying up and watching us, Harps.
I know it's late. Narrow Way, Narrow Gate.
Oh, yeah. Levi, Narrow Way, Narrow Gate. Risha M. I knew I seen you in there. How you doing, Risha? Thanks for joining us. And if I missed you, there's a lot of chat to scroll through. So if I missed you, Hobbit's in there. Funsalot. What's going on, Funsalot? Let's see. I think that's about it. So I'll go ahead and toss it over to you for any final thoughts, Andy, and then we'll get up out of here.
All right. So I guess in final thoughts, my plea is for any of us out there in EMS that is seeing this, that sees what's happening. You don't have to be as open as I've been, but you know, come on anonymous, send us something. I know you're seeing it. We're seeing it. It's I've lost 5 coworkers. That 4 died in their sleep, and 3 died in their sleep. 1 dropped dead standing up, and the other one had a massive stroke, and he'll never speak again. He'll never walk again. He's got 2 or 3 kids and a wife. I mean, we're running out of time. We're in this calm period at the moment where you have an opportunity to speak up. We don't have much time, I don't think. Yeah. Not to, make it public what's happening. People don't know what's happening to them. You know, my patients, a lot of them don't know. You know, they're injured. I believe a lot of them, especially my Parkinson's patients. I've seen many Parkinson's patients now who developed their Parkinson's mere 2-3 months after they took their jabs. You know, again, I can't prove causation, but it's not normal. I've been in the business for a lot of years. This is not normal. So any of you out there that sees the new normal and knows that it's not normal, speak up. I mean, we don't have time.
Well said, well said. All right. I guess that does it for today, ladies and gentlemen. We will see you in about 45 minutes, hopefully, in America Unplugged chat. That's on mainly on Rockfin, America Unplugged. So we'll see you there, and check out our website to see, you know, where to find Six and where to find Tom and Angry Tiger and all those. So I guess take care, and until next time.